How can you help save a horse's life? You can help me in my mission making the world a better place for horses if you share this episode or any of your other favorite episodes. The one on colic, obesity, what we learn about feeding horses. Any of these, when you share and get a friend or somebody that follows you on social media to listen, gets that information and makes the world a better place for their horses, which in turn makes the world a better place for them. So thank you for those that are sharing these episodes. That's how this podcast is growing, and it means the world to me, and it shows that this information is resonating with you. Thank you. We're going to start with the story today. It begins. The tramp steamer Drake plowed away from the coast of India and pushed its blunt prow into the Arabian Sea, homeward bound. Slowly it made its way west towards the Gulf of Aden. Its hold was loaded with coffee, rice, tea, oil, seeds, and jute. Black smoke poured from its one stack, darkening the hot, cloudless sky. Alexander Ramsey, known to his friends back home in New York City as Alec, leaned over the rail and watched the water slide away from the sides of the boat. His red hair blazed redder than ever in the hot sun. His tanned elbows rested heavily on the rail as he turned his freckled face towards the fast disappearing shore. It had been fun, those 2 months in India. He would miss Uncle Ralph, miss the days they'd spent together in the jungle, even the screams of the panthers and the many eerie sounds of that jungle night. Never again would he think of a missionary's work as easy work. No, sir, you had to be big and strong, able to ride horseback for long hours through the tangled jungle paths. Alec glanced down proudly at the hard muscles in his arms. Uncle Ralph had taught him how to ride, the one thing in the world he'd always wanted to do. But it was all over now. Rides back home would be few. The captain and crew were kind to Alec, but the days passed monotonously for the homeward bound boy as the Drake steamed its way through the Gulf of Aden into the Red Sea. The tropic sun beat down mercilessly on the heads of the few passengers aboard. The Drake kept near the coast of Arabia, endless miles of barren desert shore. But Alec's thoughts were not on the scorching sand. Arabia, where the greatest horses in the world were bred. Did other fellows dream of horses the way he did? To him, a horse was the greatest animal in the world. Then one day the Drake headed for a small Arabian port. As they approached the small landing, Alec saw a crowd of Arabs milling about in great excitement. Obviously, it was not often that a boat stopped there. But as the gangplank went down with a bang, Alec could see that it wasn't the ship itself that was attracting all the attention. The Arabs were crowding towards the center of the landing. Alec heard a whistle. Shrill, loud, clear, unlike anything he'd ever heard before. He saw a mighty black horse rear on its hind legs, its four legs striking out in the air. A white scarf was tied across its eyes. The crowd broke and ran. White lather ran from the horse's body. His mouth was open, his teeth bared. He was a giant of a horse, glistening black, too big to be pure Arabian. His mane was like a crest, mounting then falling low. His neck was long and slender, and arched to the small, savagely beautiful head. The head was that of the wildest of all creatures, a stallion born wild, and was beautiful, savage, splendid. A stallion with a wonderful physical perfection that matched his savage, ruthless spirit. Once again, the black screamed and rose on his hind legs. Alec could hardly believe his eyes and ears. A stallion, a wild stallion, unbroken, such as he had read and dreamed about. Two ropes led from the halter on the horse's head, and the four men were attempting to pull the stallion towards the gangplank. They were going to put him on the ship. They hit the black's hindquarters. The black snorted and plunged. If ever Alec saw hate expressed by a horse, he saw it then. They had him halfway up the plank. Alec wondered where they would put him if they ever did succeed in getting him on the boat. Then he was on. Soon the Drake was again underway. Alec gazed back at the port, then he turned to the stall. The black horse was still fighting madly inside. The days that followed were hectic ones for Alec, passengers, and crew. He never dreamed a horse could have such spirit, be so untamable. The ship resounded far into the night from the blows struck by the powerful legs. The outside of the stall was now covered with reinforcements. The Drake steamed through the Suez into the Mediterranean. That night, Alec stole out upon deck. Leaving the rest of the passengers playing cards, he listened carefully. The black was quiet tonight. Quickly, he walked in the direction of the stall. At first, he couldn't see or hear anything. Then, as his eyes became accustomed to the darkness, he made out the pink-colored nostrils of the black, who was sticking his head out of the window. Alec walked slowly towards him. He put one hand in his pocket to see if the lumps of sugar he had taken from the dinner table were still there. The wind was blowing against him, carrying his scent away. He was quite close now. The black was looking out on the open sea, his ears pricked forward, his thin skin nostrils quivering, his black mane flowing like windswept flame. The stallion turned and looked directly at him. His black eyes blazed. Alec took the sugar out of his pocket and left it on the windowsill. Later, when he returned, it was gone. Every night thereafter, Alec would steal up to the stall, leave the sugar, and depart. Sometimes he would see the black, and other times he would only hear the rings of hoof against the floor. That was the beginning chapter of The Black Stallion.
And Secretary is being led. He is number
the horse.
And the horse is the best thing in the world, isn't it? So I suppose I've always loved them, really, ever since I was a little girl.
Everybody's in line, and they're off. The Secretary to wave very well, has good position.
The love.
Oh, I never thought owning a horse could mean so much to me.
And Secretary not taking the lead.
The madness.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
Lightning now. He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Their story.
Mustang is more involved in the early development of this breed than I thought they were, but they were.
Secretariat has opened a 22-length lead. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner.
Welcome to Mad About Horses.
Hello, I'm Dr. Chris Mortensen. I am an equine scientist, educator, enthusiast, and host of the Mad About Horses podcast. Today, starting off reading that chapter one of The Black Stallion, when I started to think about horses being transported around the world, that movie, which was based on that book, came to my mind, The Black Stallion. And I remember the tight bond that the young boy Alec had with this horse. And again, as a young boy, it inspired me to go down the path that I did. So I thought it would be fun to start this podcast talking about how horses have been transported around the world, how they have helped settle parts of the world, and then look at how horses are moved around today and what that means to you as a horse owner. What impacts does that have on them when we do put them in trailers or put them on airplanes or boats? Or maybe even trains in still parts of the world? And does that have health implications, performance implications? And then this year in 2024, as I record this, we have the Olympic Games coming up in Paris, France. And from every corner of the earth, we have horses being transported with their riders and trainers and grooms, as you're going to find out, to Paris, France. So how do the horses get there? What's the process of taking a horse from, say, Sydney, Australia, which is going to happen here soon as I record this, and for that horse to get on an airplane and fly to Paris, France, and then after competing, get back on an airplane and fly back to Australia? That's as far as you can get away from Paris, France, and the Olympics. So that is a long journey for these horses. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then I'll finish off today with some trailering tips, because all of us should know how to trailer a horse, and every horse should know how to load and unload from a trailer. And we'll talk about why. Because it is so important for a horse to be able to get on a trailer safely for you and them, and then get off. Just imagine having an emergency. You need to take the horse to the vet clinic. How are you going to get them there? Well, obviously you need to trailer them. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And it's really interesting that doing the research for this podcast, study after study after study, this was one of these topics when I looked at it, like colic or some of these bigger ones. But when you go and look into the scientific literature, the scientific studies conducted all around the world, the impacts of transportation on horses is a big topic. Looking at the stress and then the health implications and then their welfare implications, but really looking at the health of the horse. And I remember even reading some of these studies years ago when I was looking at my own research evaluating exercise stress in horses and implications on nutrition, health, and reproduction. In these studies, you'll see this quoted over and over, and this one was just from Dr. Ted Friend. In 2021, he said, quote, "Around the world, horses are transported more than any other type of livestock animal." Now, Dr. Friend, I knew at Texas A&M. His office was just a few doors down from mine when I was there as a graduate student. He retired in 2015. Very well known for looking at animal welfare, circus animals, horses, livestock animals. And basically what he's saying, and this is what others are saying, compared to any other large animal, horses are transported more often, and that makes sense. Any weekend you can go out on the road, you will see people pulling horses no matter where you live in the world. You will go out and there is somebody going to a horse show or somebody trailering a horse for a pleasure ride. There is horses on the move all the time. There are horses in the air as I record this flying around the planet. It is incredible when you really think about it. Another research paper that I pulled a lot of good information from was titled "Effects of Transport and Exercise on Behavior of Sport Horses." And this was from Barbara Patalino out of Italy. I will pull some things from this because really I had a big interest in, okay, if I trailer my horse to a competition, how soon do I have to get there to allow that stress to dissipate or any disruptions to that horse's mental state, physiology, so they're at their top form when we compete. And I'm sure some of you are interested in that too. So that's one of the questions I asked when looking at this, as well as the health implications. You know, what are things we need to be aware of to ensure our horses are transported safely so we don't run into those big vet bills down the road? And she was saying in this paper, the data that she had, that in the United States alone, Americans were spending over $2 billion per year transporting horses. And then when you looked at Dr. Pete Gibbs, he reported, quote, "The typical Texas horse owner transports 2.5 horses on 24 trips per year, averaging 380 kilometers per trip. That's close to 240 miles. Now, Texas is a big state, so I could see where owners there are having to travel quite a distance to compete, you know, in reining competitions or other Western disciplines. So they have to travel quite far, but horses are on the move, you know, not just in Texas, not just in Kentucky or Florida, but in any of the states in the USA or in Canada or in Mexico, South America. Where I drive every weekend, I see horses on the move. And they're on the move during the weeks too. It's just on the weekends is where you typically see a lot of them because that's when horse competitions usually are going on. Okay, so we know horses are moving around the world. when did this start? That was a question I had. Thinking about the history of the horse, and again, that's where I get excited, thinking about the impacts horses have had on humanity. And going back to the history of the horse, if you haven't listened to that episode, horses were domesticated about 5,500 years ago, anywhere from 5,500, 6,000 years ago. Now, that was in the Eurasian steppe, parts of where modern-day Ukraine, Kazakhstan, you know, so Europe, Asia, that area. And so, obviously, initially, horses were moved, once domesticated, by their own hooves. Whether they were ridden or driven in large herds to be spread out across Asia, across Europe, down into Africa. And for a long time, that's how horses were transported. But then outside of that, do we have any evidence before these horses went across the great oceans of, you know, the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean or the Indian Ocean? And yes, there was actually information 3,500 years ago. So this is on pottery and other artwork that showed horses were in early ships. These were ships that were moved like by great oars. They had little sails, but these weren't the big sail ships that we think of in yesteryear. These are really old ships of triremes, the Greeks, the Romans, and it was actually the Persians, when they were invading Greece, brought all their cavalry. It was a military technology, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts. So to be successful, they learned to transport lots of horses, not just a couple, but lots of horses via boat. And that was happening 3,000, 3,500 years ago. That's incredible to think of horses being moved across the Mediterranean Sea in boats back then. And then when you really dig into this, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but there was a paper, Historical Perspectives on Long Distance Transport of Animals. This was a veterinary journal out of Italy. Very interesting that the Romans 2,000 years ago used carts to pull horses. So like a very rudimentary horse trailer, they were trailering horses on their roads throughout Europe and Africa and parts of Asia, the Romans. And the reason is because these highly prized race horses, chariot horses, they didn't want them exerting themselves on the road. So they would load them up into a wagon, and then that would be pulled by either oxen or other horses. So there is a lot of evidence that these horses have been on the move for a long time. It's incredible when you think about it. Then when you come into the Middle Ages, some of these earlier ships transporting horses, William the Conqueror, when he invaded England, brought all his hundreds of horses from the mainland Europe. The conquistadors, when they landed, they introduced horses to North America in 1519. Horses were introduced to Australia by Europeans in 1788. They made it to New Zealand in 1814, and they've been spreading out ever since. In fact, horses exist in about 160 out of the 195 countries in the world. They're everywhere. They're in island nations in the Caribbean, in the Pacific. In the Indian Ocean, there are horses wherever you go. And as well as donkeys and mules, all of our equids that are domestic, they have spread out with us. And don't even forget, this wasn't just boats. They were on trains. They were being trailered in wagons. So as humans migrated, they brought their equid companions with them. They got on boats and they crossed the oceans that took months. It wasn't days from, say, England to North America or Spain to Central America or South America or North America. It was months. And then think about that journey. Again, you can't get much further than Australia and the United Kingdom or France. Those horses on those boats traveling from Europe halfway across the world to make it to Australia. I mean, talk about some tough horses. And how'd they do it? You know, and that's not what this podcast is. I mean, that's something just to think about, because really I want to pause here, have some appreciation for these horses. And I know you do. I know you love them. That's why you listen to this podcast. But if you really think about it, and as I put this together, and I'm just, every time I look at the history of the horse, and they've done so much for us. They've been on the boats. They've been on the trains. They've been in the wagons. They've pulled us across the world. For what? What have we given back to them? Some hay and grain? Now, I know today we love them, but 120 years ago or 200 years ago, I knew there was people that loved horses, but I don't know if we appreciate them as much as we appreciate them today. And it just makes me appreciate them that much more. So I hope you do too. As I go into the 21st century, as we look at how horses move around the world today. And obviously, the majority of them are in a horse trailer, horse van, or a large truck. Now, some horses are still being transported via sea, but not as much as yesteryear. With welfare concerns, it is a long journey. I did see a study where horses were being transported from Italy to Argentina via ship. They did look at the stress, and the horses did okay. But a lot of countries, like here, are banning long-haul travel on ships for livestock animals for welfare concerns. And I will tell you, for horses, the reason you're probably not seeing them on ships is because it's probably just as expensive or the same price as it is to fly them, unbelievably. That horses now fly on big cargo aircraft together. And you can look at the images, and it's just hilarious and amazing to see all of these horses in stalls as they're flying around the world. It's incredible. And it just makes you want to hug them all. But when we look at when horses were first on airplanes, it was 1946. It wasn't recently that horses were being transported via airplane. And ever since then, it's just been increasing. Earlier in my career, a few decades ago, this idea of shuttle stallions, and I was at a very high-end stable in Lexington, Kentucky. And this is, you know, multi-million dollar thoroughbreds. And none of their top stallions were there when we did the tour of the facility because they were in South America breeding horses. So they're called shuttle stallions. And what they're doing is the stallions are in North America during the breeding season, which is, you know, January, February, March, April for thoroughbreds. Then they have a couple months off. Then they are transported via airplane down to South America, where they will breed horses for that breeding season, which is like August, September, October, because the seasons are different in the northern and southern hemisphere. Then the stallions come back to Kentucky for the next breeding season. They're called shuttle stallions. And I was like, wow, they're really flying them all around the world. And yes, and now today in 2024, as I record this, horses are being flown everywhere. Now, via road transport, that is the most common. That is probably what you are familiar with. That is what I'm familiar with in preparing, training, loading, driving with trailers, and then unloading horses. That is very common for any horse owner. And really, the 1960s and 1970s, at least in the United States, was really the trailer age for horse transportation. That is where they were designing a lot of these horse trailers for driving these horses around for competitions and everything. Down here in New Zealand and Australia, they call them horse floats, horse boxes, horse trailers. That's North America, but you do see vans, the bigger ones. Used to load and unload thoroughbreds on them for the racetrack. And you'll notice many of these horse trailers are pretty rudimentary to some high-end ones with sleeping quarters for the drivers or for you as you drive around. Some of you may own those. They're very fancy, carry all the feed and all the tack and everything you need. And the most pampered horses I ever saw were the Budweiser Clydesdales. Wow. talk about an incredible setup. Their big trailers, air conditioned, spotless. Those horses were so great. And if you ever get to look at one or look inside one, you'll be amazed. Those horses are so well cared for. And that trailer was just incredible. It's probably the best horse trailer next to the $1 million thoroughbreds being driven around that I've ever seen. Now, I opened up saying every horse needs to be trained to travel in a trailer. This is something that I've always implemented when training young horses, how to lose their fear of a trailer, how to properly load and unload and adapt to being driven around. Because again, in emergency, your horse needs to be able to get on that trailer. I also would warn a lot of horse owners in the event of emergency, like whether it's a hurricane or cyclone, depending on where you live in the world, evacuations, wildfires. This was the one I always use when I talked about emergency management, and maybe we'll have a future podcast on that. And the way I would describe it is, imagine you see a wildfire coming towards your facility, and these things move rapidly, especially in California when they get these really hot desert winds, which we call the Santa Ana winds. They blow hot. It's like an air dryer in your face. And it moves fire very fast. So imagine smoke. You see the fire. You are frantic. And in your best ability to be calm, you need to go catch your horse, who can smell and see all of this too. And then load them on a trailer so you can evacuate them. And you have to do that within, say, 10 minutes. You don't have time to have an argument with your horse whether they're going to get on the trailer or not. So imagine if they have never loaded on a trailer before. They'd never been trained. And that happens. And again, that's why I say, please share this information or talk about it or think about it, because it can save your horse's life. I would always say, too, don't ever endanger yourself, period. In the worst case scenario where that horse wouldn't load on the trailer, I told people, make sure you have your phone number on that horse somewhere, and then you can let them go. They will find safety on their own, and you evacuate and get the heck out of Dodge. All right, that's a whole another podcast, and I'll put that on my list because I think it's an important one for people to know what to do in emergencies, how to plan for them. But then you have horses trailering mostly for competitions and shows. During the breeding season, mares are on the move, sometimes stallions, but really mares are. They're being transported to the breeding facility to breed with the stallion. Veterinary care is huge. Horses up and down the highways to get to the vet hospitals. Are there training facilities, sales and auctions, relocation? You bought a horse and you need to bring them to your property. Well, how are they going to get there? Obviously, trailering. Or, as we're going to talk about, if you bought a horse in Europe because you have that affordable income and you want to bring them to North America, you're going to be flying them on an airplane. And I'm going to talk about the process of that here in a second. But recreation riding, loading your horses up to take them to a trailhead, you're going to go ride for a few hours, then bring them back, get back on the trailer and go home. That's very common. It's something I've done. I've gone to parades. I've gone to events with horses. And the most I think I've ever trailered was 8 to 10. I can't remember the exact number. It was a big trailer full of horses with Parsons Mounted Cavalry. And I was taking them to one of the parades in San Antonio and driving the big truck with a bunch of horses in the back. So it's very common to do that. Now, when you are transporting horses, I want to use this as an example, and that's for the Olympics. And a lot of the equestrian teams are in preparation for this now. There's a very fun article written in USA Today, and it was, how do more than 300 horses travel to the Tokyo Olympics? Business class. And it's so true. So more than 300 horses went to Tokyo. That was the last Olympics before this one in Paris, France. And they all had to fly there. think about it. All the horses from North America and Europe and wherever, they all had to fly to Japan. And so it was talking about how they transported these horses. And then for the U.S. team, all of their horses, plus four reserve riders, plus seven coaches, 16 leaders, 16 grooms who are all there to care for the horses. Also, they have a farrier and four veterinarians. Then they had two equine physical therapists and one human physical therapist, again, to support our equestrian athletes coming out of the United States. Then they had to bring all their equipment and feed. That was over 1,000 pounds of that, feed, vitamins, everything they needed. And all of that had to get on an airplane and fly to Tokyo. And so it's just really fun when you think about that, that all these horses are on the move and then they've got to fly home. Now, transporting horses via airplane or even trailer. So this is important for anybody that is going to load a horse on the trailer. Make sure you know the transportation laws. Because depending on your country, there is going to be different laws on transporting these large livestock animals. So just as an example, within the United States, all states require a negative Coggins test before a horse may be transported across state lines. So for example, if I was back in California and I wanted to go to Las Vegas for the National Rodeo with my horse, and it's not that far past the state line, but going from California to Nevada, I would need a negative Coggins test and maybe other things depending on what Nevada requires. So you have to be aware of the laws. And for the United States, it's by state. Other countries, check your regions, check your laws. And then internationally, there are more stringent, tight restrictions, especially with horses, but any sort of animal. Generally, there are laws on importing them into the country, even if it's just to compete in the Olympics and then fly home. So there is export certificates, things like that. I've never transported a horse via airplane. I did bring our dog over from the UK where my partner's from. So I do have some experience in this from that perspective. And it was at the end of the COVID pandemic, we were able to get him into the country. And how would you do that? So if I wanted to transport my horse, and I'll throw some similar stuff that we dealt with our dog, you will go through a company. And there was certain ones for pets that we used going from the UK to New Zealand. One that does this for horses, International Racehorse Transport, IRT. That's probably one of the biggest in the world that is shipping or helping owners ship their horses to and fro different continents. And off their website, they have a really good frequently asked questions. So I did pull that off. And here's some things that as a horse owner, if you want to fly with your horse, I'll get to costs here at the end because it's a lot cheaper than you would think or what I thought. But things that you have to think about. So before the flight, this is before that horse can be transported across international boundaries, right? And gets on an airplane. You need certain tests. And we had to do this with our dog for 6 months. We needed rabies because we're rabies free here. He needed all the vaccines, all of the things done before I could bring my dog to New Zealand. For your horse, they are going to need any tests and vaccines before they get on an airplane to fly overseas, wherever they're going. So this company, IRT, you may ask, am I responsible for arranging any tests personally? And IRT says no, they will complete all the necessary tests required on your behalf. So when you pay them this fee, they will do all the tests for you. They do all the prep, all the paperwork. So for example, do I have to apply for permits from quarantine or health authorities myself? Because you're going to need a quarantine period probably before you fly and then once you get there. But again, that's going to depend on the country you're going to. And again, no, you don't have to apply for the permits. IRT takes care of all the import-export permits. Do you deliver your horse to the pre-export quarantine or to the airport? IRT can organize that for you. But if you want to deliver your horse yourself, maybe to cut down on costs, you probably could do that. And then do you deal with the customs authorities at the port of departure and arrival? And no, IRT does that for you. So that's all before. They help you do all the prep. Then you've asked, what is the quarantine involved? Well, that's going to depend on the country you're going to. So they can't tell you. You know, if you're going, say, from Europe to the United States, then it's whatever the United States quarantine requires. Do you need insurance? They say you should get insurance. Okay, so that's all before the flight. And again, if you had questions, they're wonderful. The company that we worked for our dog, they were wonderful, very easy to deal with, and they do this all the time. All right, so during the flight, is the flight direct or are there stops? And what does that mean? Well, the IRT's grooms or whoever's on the flight will take care of the horses if there's any stops. So if you think of that flight from Sydney to Paris, France, which is probably as long as you can get, there probably is going to be a stopover, say in Doha or something like that. But the IRT groom is with the horse the whole time. They are taking care of the horse. Now, on the flight, the horse is in a stall, and none of the horses are given tranquilizers unless they deem that they need it. So none of these horses are just doped up before they get on. But if they are stressed out or too stressed out, then they can give them some tranquilizer to calm them down. But I'm going to talk about the stress of the flight because that's really interesting. And then after the flight, again, at the port of arrival, this company is going to take care of the quarantine. They're going to take care of the horse. Then at the port of destination, you can greet your horse after the quarantine period is over. We did it with our dog. He flew from London to Singapore, where he was there for 12 hours. He was let out of his crate, played with, got water, got food, then loaded back on from the flight from Singapore to Auckland. And then he was 10 days in quarantine before he was released. And he traveled halfway around the world to be with his family. So this is going on all the time. Now, if you're going to ask for costs, a lot's going to depend on that. Think about where you're going. So when I was researching this a little bit, I saw anywhere from $3,000 up to $15,000 to transport a horse. So probably like a business class flight costs for long haul flights, you know, across oceans. It was quoted too for one person that flying their horse from Perth, Western Australia, so that's the far west, to Chicago in the United States. That's a pretty long flight. That's probably 20 hours. That's pretty far. They were quoted $14,000, and that's probably as far as you, halfway around the world, right? That's as far as you can probably go. So that's probably the top end. And I honestly would think shipping a horse would be like $20,000-$30,000, but it's not. And it's actually getting cheaper, especially post-COVID era. So that is the most extreme transport we have of horses today is in these cargo airplanes. And now you may be going, okay, what's the impact on the horse? And I have to just summarize all this because study after study after study, looking at all these different variables, time of year, temperature, distance, has the horse traveled before or not? There are so many different variables that are going to impact the stress. So I want to talk about the road transport, and then I'll talk about flying because the flying one is incredible. Road transport is stressful to your horse. And I'm going to use this study, cortisol release and heart rate variability in horses during road transport. This was a study that I looked at many years ago when I was looking at analyzing stress in my horses for my research. And it was one of the things we're looking at is how do we measure cortisol? Because if I approach a horse with a needle to draw blood, that could be stressful. That could increase stress. So looking at a study of non-invasive ways of looking at measuring stress, cortisol, and we're looking at saliva and feces. So all these different studies in transport, because we know taking a horse out of their home environment, sticking them in this somewhat unfamiliar box trailer, or even a large trailer or van, even the Budweiser Clydesdales, they're accustomed to it, but it's still a little bit stressful for them. They get on, then they take off, right? As you drive, anybody that's hauled horses, one of the tips is drive very slowly, deliberately, accelerate slowly, deaccelerate slowly, because you have live animals behind you that are shifting the weight, all of that. And then we get to, say, a competition. I get off, there's new sights, new smells, I'm in an unfamiliar environment. Obviously, it's going to be stressful for the horse. And life is stressful for all of us. So stress isn't always bad. These acute stressors, we do recognize that all animals experience it. Chronic stress is really where we get into welfare concerns. That is where horses really, their health will degrade, their behavior will degrade, disease, that is where we get worried. But these acute stresses, we do have to be aware of them too, right? So we need to lessen it so it's not so stressful to cause something like colic. But we have to accept that there is some level of stress as the horse goes through all of these stimuli. Then the question I will get to that will lead there is, what happens when you get to competition? How soon do you need to get there to allow your horse to adjust, come back down, let that stress dissipate so they're 100% in the game and they compete at their best ability? So study after study has shown, yes, it is stressful. We've measured cortisol. We've measured it in the blood. We've measured it in the feces. We've measured it in the saliva. Generally, the stress is at the beginning and the end of the trip. And I remember this study that I'm going to quote because my master's mentor, Dr. Ann Rodick, and Dr. Carolyn Stoll wrote this paper. I remember because I was with her when she published it. I remember when this paper came out. But when they were looking at doing studies in the stress of horses on the highway, they concluded that in the course of a long journey, higher cortisol values are representative of the initial phase of the journey. So there is this spike. And then over time, it starts to dampen and lessen because the horses get adapted to it. There is studies looking at horses that are used to being transported. So looking at standardbreds as they're transported to the track to compete. Short journeys tend to be a little bit more stressful in the sense the horses don't go through an adaptive period. So the loading phase is stressful. It takes a while for them to kind of get used to being on the road. And then the unloading is stressful. So they don't really have time to adapt. Horses that don't have any experience traveling in trailers, it is very stressful for them, especially on longer journeys. So there is data out there that all these different variables can impact the stress of the horse. And I think we know that. And it's study after study, and they're just looking at different things. But that leads me to ask, what's the effect of transport on sport horses? So the one in looking at the standardbreds, they argue horses should get to the site of competition at least 4 hours before they begin any sort of physical activity. It's allowing that horse to adapt, allowing them to eat and drink. The other ones are talking about depends on the heat, that you should be stopping every 2 to 4 hours to water your horses. But depending on the length of the journey, that may be lengthened. You may want to get there the day before. Some of the studies suggest that for experienced horses, transport over short distances had really no impact on performance. So if you're going a couple hours away, the horse should be okay. When it came to the experience of the horse in transportation, so another study looked at the effect of transport on jumping horses. Only less experienced horses showed major signs of stress and lower performance. So if you have a younger horse that is not seasoned, has not been to a lot of shows, they're probably going to need a lot more longer time to adjust to their new surroundings. So think about that when you're planning your trips or going out to your competitions, to give your horse enough time to get off the trailer, to adapt to their new environment, to get some water, get some hay in them, and then go compete. Now, to get to the air, this one I found fascinating. When they were looking at the effects of air transportation on the heart rates, behaviors, stress responses of horses on long-haul flights, this was between 10 to 15 hours on the flights of all these horses. Really, the only times horses showed any really sort of stress for the majority of them was takeoff and landing, which you can imagine these horses in these stalls as they take off at an airplane. I could only imagine what's going through their brains. What is this? Where am I going? Or are they excited? Like, who knows? But those are the two periods as the plane is taking off, going up to air, and then as they cruise, the horses adapt. They're fine, really not showing signs of stress. Cortisol's dropped. But then when that plane gets ready and starts descending and landing, that is stressful for the horses too. Remember, they're standing up on four hooves in tighter stalls. There's changes in air pressure, so I don't know how that affects the horse compared to us, but that's probably when we see our heart rates go up. I know mine does, take off and landing. And so same for our horses, but generally they are fine. They generally are okay as they fly around the world, which is fantastic. Now, the last couple things before I get to tips is there was an incredible master's thesis that I want to highlight because this was from Kaylee Hayes out of Middle Tennessee State, published a couple years ago. And I know what goes into doing a master's thesis. It's an incredible amount of work for these students. And I found hers and I thought it was really interesting. So I wanted to bring it up. The title of her thesis was "Trailering Stress Creates False Positive Results in Diagnostic Testing for Pituitary Pars Intermediate Dysfunction in Horses." This is PPID. This is what we called Cushing's. In essence, this test to identify PPID is looking at stress hormones. And so her thesis was, if you trailer your horse to the vet hospital to get this test done, that induces stress, the trailer trip. If they get out and their blood's drawn relatively soon after that, it will trigger a false positive. And now all of a sudden your vet's saying, oh, your horse has PPID, when they don't. Highlights why I love science, where a master's student can go and do a project like this, and then we could take this information and tell our equine vets, hey, here's what we found. Be wary of this. And it changes their protocol a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it's being implemented around the world. That's why science is so fun. And that's why I do it. It's incredible. And then we make the life better for the horses and you, right? Okay. To tie all this up at the end, horse trailering tips. This was published in Equus magazine in 2019, Christine Barricut. So I want to give her credit for it, but I thought it was an excellent little summary on things you should think about when you trailer your horse. Because again, every horse in the world will trailer in their life or should. Most horses in the world. Okay, one thing she said, number one, leave horses untied or tied long while they travel. So you don't want to tie their heads up tight if you can, because you want them to get that flexibility in their neck. But if their head carriage is tied up high, it does result in a lot of respiratory stress. And this is where we see things like pneumonia and some of these other illnesses, especially with the stress of the journey and they're tied up and they can't move their necks or any of that. So if you can allow them to give them some room with their necks that they can, you know, get down and let some of that mucus drain and be natural, that is best. Transport horses in familiar congenial groups. Yes, you want them to travel with their pals. There is actually research showing if you, again, like I said, there's so many studies in this, but if you put horses that are unfamiliar together, that trip is insanely stressful for them. So be very, very careful. But again, if you're dealing with a company like an IRT, or I remember with the Thoroughbreds, they all had individual like stalls and they weren't tied up next to some other horse they didn't really know that well. So it just depends on the transport company, but that's a tip. Keep the trailer clean. Absolutely. Always keep it clean. Clean the manure. Don't let that build up. Make sure your trailer is in excellent condition. Tires are good. The floors, especially wooden floors, make sure there's no rot. It's solid and in 100% operating condition. Number four, educate your horse about loading and shipping. I've talked about that. Very, very important. Maintain good air quality inside the trailer. So you notice a lot of trailers have windows. You want those open if you can. Let some of that air circulate. She recommends rest horses at least a week after a long journey. That's just to promote overall good health and mental well-being. Be a sympathetic driver. I talked about that. Slowly accelerate. Give yourself plenty of room to slow down. If you are a driver on the road and you see somebody pulling horses, please, 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 and I'm sure you are, but please be considerate for them. You're pulling a lot of weight. Your stop distance increases dramatically. Those horses, their well-being are dependent on that driver, right, as they go. So in the stress involved, you don't want jerky movements and stuff that puts the horse off their feet. Ample water and hay if you can, but no grain. And then, you know, it's going to be each individual horse. Each individual horse is going to dictate what you do and how you do it. So I could go on and on and on. There's so much research in this field looking at this and then talking about welfare and all of that. I just wanted today to talk about how horses are moving around the world and give you some tips to help you take your horses around when you go ride and do all the things you do. Again, what the research is showing, those short trips, horses usually do okay. Yeah, it's a little bit of an acute stress, but they usually do pretty well. And especially the data showing with competition horses, you know, those short journeys, they tend to do okay without a long period of rest. But if you're going long distance, really plan that out, really think it out and think, okay, I need to get this many hours before the competition to allow my horse to adjust. And I'm sure many of you do. I'm probably preaching to the choir, but for those that haven't traveled with horses to competition, always keep that in mind. And then just be, the big thing is make sure your horses know how to get on and off a trailer safely. That is critical. And then just be a courteous driver. You know, they deserve it. The horses deserve it. And from the Persians 3,500 years ago, and other ancient civilizations to my ancestors crossing the oceans and from me crossing oceans. Horses have done it with us. And again, you just have to love them so much, don't you? I mean, you just love them. All right, welcome back. That one went long. I had so many slides. It was so easy to find data after data after data, study after study after study, showing the impacts of transportation on horses, because it's a big area that we know we can load a horse on a trailer, because that's pretty common to what we do with them, induce a stress response so we can study stress in the horse and then unload them. So that's one of the reasons we have so much data on it, is because we know we can induce stress to study it. But it has led to things like, okay, how soon do I need to get to a competition? And hopefully that is helpful to you. If it brings up any topic in your head, you're like, wow, this is a question I want answered, please email me podcast@madbarn.com. Please. I'll add it to my list. it really helps. It helps generate what you're thinking and what information you really need and want to learn about. For those of us that have given 5-star reviews on iTunes or Spotify, thank you. If you haven't yet, if you just wouldn't mind clicking on that, quick few words, really increasing circulation. But again, that social share or share with your friends or horse colleagues, that is growing the audience and again, helping spread the word. Free education, that is my mandate. And then always check us out on social media, all the channels, Mad Barn, to search for it, or go to madbarn.com, learn tab, whole host of tools at your fingertips, plus over 500 articles from DVMs, PhDs, and everybody. So thank you for listening and take care. And next week, get ready for another great topic. See you soon.